on House Bill 3960. Sorry for our committee's lack of attendance here. We have a number of them who've just flown back in from Pendleton who are getting settled and maybe watching on television now. And if they are, I need them back here. This is a continuation of a hearing that we had the other day on the alcohol credit issue. And I'd like to have a continued hearing today for the purpose of discussion of amendments that have been offered here. And perhaps some of you have some remaining questions from our last hearing that we had the other day. Let me have Gary Conkling come up quickly. Gary wanted to be in early on here and, so he could move on. Good afternoon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Gary Conkling, here today representing the Oregon Wine Growers Association. The Oregon Wine Growers Association, which represents wineries and vineyard operators, opposes the extension of credit by manufacturers or wholesalers to retailers on the sale of beer and wine. This is a position that's been consistent in the past sessions. For many small producers of wine, the cost of extending credit will further reduce their margins and profitability, especially at a time when Oregon wine sales have dropped 20% in the last year. Credit terms to retailers can create or aggravate cash flow problems that stretch out payments by some wineries to their grape suppliers. OWA recently surveyed its members on this issue, and the response was almost 2-1 against extending credit. More than 80 OWA members responded. It's also fair to note that many Oregon wineries do support the extension of credit as a way to encourage retailers to stock more premium-priced Oregon wines, and in fact, one of my members was a witness on the other side, Mr. Bruneau. It's also OWA's position that if credit terms are permitted in Oregon on the sale of beer and wine to retailers, that they should not discriminate against wineries who sell directly to retailers. With that, Mr. Chairman, that's my complete
view. Appreciate that. I'd like to have Joe Gilliam and Paul Romain, please.
Let me get that for you. Thank you.
Get tax there. I'd watch that, Mr. Romain.
Yeah. I move to the other chair. Thank you.
All right, welcome. And committee, this is a day that wanted to have occur because I had some lingering questions from the last hearing, and maybe some of you did as well. I appreciate players coming back today, and thank you, those of you who are back from Pendleton. I appreciate your effort getting back to committee. I think both of you have offered amendments, and I would like you to first talk about those, if you would. And Paul, we'll start with you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I don't have copies of the amendments. I don't know, Representative Starr, did we get the final copies besides the draft ones back?
Mr. Chair, all I have is what says work draft. I don't have an official amendment back.
All right, would you at least...
I can go through the... I'll go through what they are and what we propose to do. And let me start with the genesis of this and apologize for the lateness, but fortuitously, we had a dinner here in Salem last night, and we found out that this was actually going on for a work session. And we started sort of what we did, we being the Oregon Beer and Wine Distributors Association, started looking at the issue. What we decided was, is there something we're missing here? And what we did, we looked at the letters from the Liquor Control Commission on how you do electronic funds transfer. And it became clear to us that what we were doing was sort of misreading one of the letters. The letter basically says that electronic funds transfer, the statute authorizes electronic funds transfer. The OLCC interpretation says that you have to have completed that EFT by the close of business on the next business day. Completed the transaction basically means the funds have to be in, and that's really impossible to do. You can't do it that way. It doesn't operate that quickly. So we went back and we looked at the places where EFT is already done. And the first place it really started it was Ohio. And they have it in their regulation. I have a copy of the regulation here. And basically it lists out what can or what EFT has to, what things have to occur in EFT. Fortuitously, the state of Washington adopted the Ohio model on March 29 of this year, just less than a month ago. So they are following that model. So the state to the north for EFT does the exact same thing that Ohio has been doing successfully since 1995, where a number of retailers use the system. And what that system does is embodied in 3960-2, which you don't have, so I will explain to you what you don't have. I've done this before. The electronic funds transfer has to be basically subject to certain conditions. And what we did in the Dash 2 amendments is take a law that authorizes EFT and add a Section 2 that describes what EFT must do. It does a couple of things. One is it has to be voluntary and has to have a written agreement between the parties. So retailer and wholesaler, or retailer and winery, or retailer and brewery have an agreement in writing on how it's handled. They'll pretty much be standard form agreements. Both parties to the agreement must pay their own banking costs and other costs associated with the electronic funds transfer. In other words, no one doesn't subsidize the other. If you want to go into it, you set it up. If you don't want to go into it, you don't have to. We then go on to say, for any payment by electronic fund transfer under this section, the retail licensee must execute an irrevocable invoice or sale order, in other words, sign the invoice when the product is delivered, on or before the alcoholic beverages are delivered. In other words, it's initiated when it's signed, when you check it into the back door. And then we go on to say, and the fund transfer must be initiated by the wholesale licensee on the first business day following delivery. Now, that's actually more liberal for the retail grocer than the Ohio and the Washington statute or regs. What those regs say is you have to initiate it on or before the next business day, which means you can do it on the day of delivery. What we've said is no, you do it the next business day. So realistically, what happens in this scenario is when the delivery truck pulls up to the back of a grocer, the product is checked in, scanned, as they all are. They ensure that what is on the invoice has actually been delivered, and somebody signs it. And then that starts the transaction. That goes back to the wholesaler's shop. The next day, for example, if it's a Fred Meyer store that gets a delivery on a Tuesday, on Wednesday, the wholesaler then initiates the EFT through the clearinghouse with the two parties have agreed to. Those funds will then transfer on Thursday or Friday. It's usually 24 to 48 hours. To get the funds in. So basically, there is no backroom problem with this system at all. We've solved 95% of the testimony problems that you heard about in the public hearing. What we've done is we've said, we agree. We have always agreed. We just looked at that statute saying you could do it. The grocers looked at the statute and said, you can't do it. So what we said, all right, let's put into statute exactly how it's done in states that do it successfully. And that's what we've done. That's the proposal. We think it's a good one, and we think it solves 95% of the problems out there. Is it something that everybody will use? No. Some people will not go to EFT for whatever reason. Some people will. It just depends. We know some of the major grocers here, the parent of Fred Meyer, Kroger, their stores, we know in Ohio, have been using it for years. The Safeway and most of their places where it's authorized do not use it, although it is used in Illinois through their Dominick's. Now, it will be a choice of the grocer. Do they want to use it? Do they not want to use it? I know from others that I've talked with that there are a number of people who will go to this. And what we suggest to you is that you adopt this procedure, Let us run with it. Let us try and do it. Let us show you that it works. And if something else needs to be done later, which we don't think will, but if something else does, then we'll do it. But let's try this system. It solves 95% of the testimony problems you heard. Thank you. Be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. I think before we go to that, I'd like to go to Mr. Gilliam and have you explain your amendments, the dash one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Joe Gilliam, representing the Oregon Grocery Industry Association. Our amendments are the dash one amendments, which I believe you all have copies of before you. First part of it deletes original language. LC felt that that sentence was not in the conformity they'd like to see. So they came at it with a new sentence, strictly that was their decision to do that. What it attempts to do is define what we came down to. I think one thing Paul and I have agreed on this is this whole thing about what's the normal course of business. We've had two letters from OLCC, one using the term and the second one clarifying that it was normal course of business was the following business day. And so we've kind of agreed that's okay, what they're saying. So the discussion went towards defining what normal course of business would be in order for it to work from a practical standpoint in the stores. And so what we said was, a retail licensee, as defined in ORS 471392, must pay a manufacturer wholesaler, as defined in 471392, in the normal course of business. So we've inserted that into the statute. So it's now placed there, and then we're going to define it. For the beverages, which may not be more than 5 days after the alcoholic beverages are delivered. Then we say that the payment can be made by check, instrument, what's already available in the statute today, and electronic fund transfer, also addressing the electronic fund transfer. That it can be made by either. This would allow the entire universe of the retail grocery industry to use this provision. It does not establish credit terms, as we were discussing in the bill before, establishing a negotiated where, like Paul brought up an issue of where if there was 10 days, one store might get 2 days, and the store might get 8 days, and another store might get 10 days, and so it would unlevel the playing field on the cost issue. So we're not this way saying anyone could pay within the 5 days. That's the limit. That's the normal course of business, so it's defined for that, and there's no credit terms negotiated or otherwise, that we just get off that issue. We don't get into the extension of credit, and that's really what we've attempted to do here, Mr. Chair. Shorten the time we were asking for, but also put it in a way that doesn't get into the whole issue of credit.
Thank you. Let's go to questions at this point, and Representative Devlin.
Mr. Gilliam, if you don't confine it just to EFT transactions, and you're talking about being able to pay over a five-day period, in effect, aren't you extending credit? I mean, because then you're giving product to someone, you're on a promise that they will pay you, even though it's stipulated in state law. Isn't it still credit? I mean, an EFT transaction has an initiation and a completion, but if you have 5 days in which to, if the amendment says, I believe I just read it, but it says, you know, EFT or by check or whatever, mm-hmm. It still sounds like credit to me.
Mr. Chair, Representative Devlin, in the strictest sense, if the money is not received, you know, the minute that the product is delivered, for every minute afterwards, you could say that they're extending credit. We still today have the processing of a check. When you give them the check or a voucher or a draft or anything else, there's still time going on until that's processed and the money's actually transferred, as it is with electronic funds transfer. It's not, by the time we initiate it, it's not instantly in their account. It's gone to the home office, it's through the accounting, it's then initiated through the financial institutions and then dropped into the distributor's account. So there is time no matter what you look at in all this. What we're saying in the difference in this would be, these would not be negotiated credit terms, difference between one retailer to another, that all people would have the ability, this is just the normal course of business. Here's the time period. You got to be paid up before the end of that time period.
Other questions? Representative March.
When
I'm looking at section 2 that starts on page 1, line 23. Electronics fund transfer initiated by the retail licensee within the normal course of business, which may not be more than 5 business days after the alcoholic beverages are delivered. Do I understand that to mean that the retail licensee wouldn't have to start the electronics funds transfer until the 5th day after delivery?
Mr. Chair, Representative March, yes, that's correct.
Okay.
For the question for you, Paul. We're going to have your amendments in about 5 minutes or less for us to take a look at. Now, let me go to you, Joe. In looking at the Dash 2 amendments, this whole idea about EFT and what Paul has just talked about, it would appear to be drawing toward the middle on the issue, but let me ask you about its usability to your clients in a practical sense.
Mm-hmm.
Could you make a statement on that?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, the practical application, and we appreciate what Paul's trying to accomplish here, but the practical application of that is not many people are going to use that form of EFT, unfortunately, for a couple of reasons. One is, if you have the ability to use EFT today and you can afford to use it, pay the setup fees, transaction fees, and those types of things, you have a system that's in place, and to change to a system that would have distributor withdrawal rather than you initiating it, the retail initiating it, would be adding another system or another service to pay to have that transaction handled in the manner in the Dash 2 amendments. The other side of that is also you're going to have some people reluctant to go to EFT because they don't want someone to have access to their checking account. They don't do business that way. They don't want anybody having outside access, even if it's withdrawal, and even if it's, you know, and I'm sure some of the services have protection and bonds and those types of things. They aren't going to go for that to come in. And the third group is going to be the group who just can't afford transactions and setup fees and really cuts into their margins, so they're going to continue to pay COD because it's not practical for, and you heard some testimony on that last time. Even some of the, just from the way it would be set up, I don't think even the largest retailer in the state would use it.
Paul, comments?
Actually, it really pays to read, Mr. Chair, it does actually pay to read the stuff that I have in my file. I have a letter here dated January 11th, 1995. The letter is to three people. The executive director, my counterpart, of the Wholesale Beer and Wine Association of Ohio, the president of the Ohio Grocers Association, and the public affairs director of the Ohio Council of Retail Merchants. And it says that the Department of Liquor Control has received your proposed guidelines for electronic, my tongue is stuck there, data interchange, EDI. And it basically goes with the conditions and stuff, but it basically says it will comply with their electronic funds transfer rule. The industry, both the grocers and the wholesalers, were the ones who crafted this in Ohio, and it's been working. We're not asking you to do anything that's weird. Quite the contrary, we're asking you to do something that's proven and that is identical in what has to be done, different form, one's in rule, ours would be in statute, to what is in Washington State, where you have, in effect, common management, because with a lot of the retailers, they do cross over, use Portland as for Southwest Washington. And frankly, some of the wholesalers are beginning to cross over too. There's some of my wholesalers have distributorships up there. So it's something that they're going to, you know, if they do go to it, which we think they will, because they use it in other states. Now, there will be some that won't. That's just the nature of the beast.
Other questions? I think for now we'll dismiss the two of you and in all likelihood ask you to come back up here.
You want us to stay here this Friday afternoon?
If you would, please. Thank you.
We're staying here.
You stay here. let's see, Gary Oxley, would you
come forward, please?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, Gary Oxley, representing Fred Meyer Safeway, and to make sure I get this absolutely correct, to my right is a spokesperson from Fred Meyer who would like to address the Ohio situation in which Fred Meyer's parent company, Kroger, operates.
Thank you. You can identify yourself, please.
David Dethridge, Chief Financial Officer with Fred Meyer Stores. Yeah, I would like to address that situation in Ohio. The way that my understanding is that that works is that there's a third party involved that actually the distributors send copies of their invoices to the third party. The third party then, upon delivery to the stores, actually initiates the EFT transaction. And what it does, it basically creates another layer of complexity to the payment process. It creates more reconciliation issues for the retailers, as well as it adds additional costs for the distributors, too, because they pay the fee to the third party. So that is not being handled through Kroger's systems necessarily. It's been handled through a third party. We have the ability, Fred Meyer Stores has the ability to basically pay within the 5-day terms that's being proposed, like a seamless transaction. When the delivery is completely finished at the store level and they've received it in, approved it, from that point on, it just flows through our accounting systems, our automated systems, and the following day an EFT is initiated. The next day, either next day or 2 days, it's received by the vendor's bank. So it's untouched from the point that the receiving clerk approves it. In Ohio, they have a third party involved in it, which is inherently creates some additional overhead type issues, reconciliation issues. It creates issues at the store level too with additional processes. So it doesn't eliminate the costs associated with how we're currently processing those invoices.
Any further questions?
I just wanted to follow up. Mr. Dethridge, you said when Fred Meyer receives a delivery, it's processed there at the store, checked in, and the following day an EFT is initiated.
Right.
So you don't need 5 days.
We don't. We could do it probably 4 days on a regular basis. I think the 5 days is, we can run into situations where at the end of a day when we pull files from the store, for some reason a store's file is late or doesn't get pulled or whatever, could be delayed, could be a system problem or something like that. I think the point would be that once the vendor's set up as an EFT vendor, it's automatic from the time that our receiving clerk approves that receiving. So assuming that nothing delays it from flowing through our automated systems, then, yeah, it would be on either the third or fourth day.
Received.
Yeah, they would actually have the funds.
Right,
either on
but it's
the
initiated
day.
The following day at the very latest.
Right. Just because our systems go out and pull those files in from the stores on that night after they're delivered. And one other, we're going to be converting to a different AP system through Kroger systems, which might possibly add an additional day to that time frame too, just mainly because we have a 3-hour time difference between here and Cincinnati. And so if our files have to be sent back to Cincinnati to be processed, you run into another 3-hour time difference there. And so it's just processing time frame. A delay.
And a follow-up on that, you mentioned now Kroger, you're a subsidiary Kroger.
Yes.
Do they use the EFT system in Ohio?
They do in Columbus, the Columbus marketing area. Kroger uses it, I think, in four markets. But like I said, they all four use that third party to do that processing.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. So in the process of things on EFT, it can take 3, 4, 5 days for payment to be received.
Mr. Chair, that would be correct. I would also remind the committee that was delivered in testimony by Safeway, because their accounts payable system is set up in Arizona, a two or three day system would not work for them. Mm-hmm. They would continue probably with the existing method.
Mm-hmm. Another question I had, but it escaped me. Representative Devon.
Yes, Mr. Oxley. If under a rare circumstance it might take more than 2 days, do you have any objection to a requirement that it be initiated on the date after receipt?
Mr. Chair, Representative Devlin, would you restate, please?
Okay. If we know that from the testimony that the normal transaction takes 2 days, and there may be rare circumstances where it takes longer, would you have a problem with the requirement that it must be initiated the day after receipt of the goods?
Mr. Chair, Representative Devlin, initiation would be on the part of when you're saying the initiation.
Retailer or the wholesaler. I mean, it could actually be done either way.
If I could seek a clarification, when you say the normal transaction takes 2 days, what I'm not aware of that myself. That any transaction has ever had a particular time frame on it.
Mr. Chairman, we've had testimony that that an electronic funds transfer normally takes, I think, 24 hours, 48 hours, depending upon how it's done. There might be rare circumstances that it takes a longer time. But I think the question we're asking here, and I don't know if it had to be, it would have to be initiated by the retailer or initiated by the wholesaler, about if you'd have an objection to in statute, whatever transaction had to be initiated the day after receipt, meaning start the transaction the day after receipt in terms of an EFT.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes. I understand now what you're saying. No, that we would not have an objection to the transaction starting at that point.
Okay. Any further questions for these people? Any final summation statement? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Let's see. Jim Parker signed up to testify. Is Mr. Parker here? Okay, let me ask, are there any others here who would like to testify on this? Okay, thank you. All right, I think what I'd like to do is have Mr. Gilliam and Mr. Romaine back. Thank you. Okay, has everyone had an opportunity to take a look at the dash twos? Today, because my intention is not to go into a work session here. I want to keep it to a public hearing today. I really do have a desire to get something done on this issue, and I believe the two of you do. And our desire here is to come to an amicable solution, and to do that, I think we're going to have to ask all the questions we can to, as a committee, go away, think about this, and come back with what we're willing to do. But I guess a question that I have for you at this point is, is when it comes to the transaction itself, and punctual payment, which of course is something that all of us in the retail business love to have, not many of us have the opportunity to enjoy cash on the barrel. Not many of us do. I know I certainly don't in my own business. And with that said, what kinds of aligning of the planets have to take place in the businesses of those you represent to have them accepting of credit, whether it be 10 days, whether it be 5 days, whether it be 3 days? What kind of realignment has to take place in hearts and minds for that concept to be acceptable to them?
Well, to quote an old song, when the moon is in the seventh house and Jupiter aligns with Mars.
What decade was that from?
Long.
You were in long before your time.
Oh, no.
The we make no excuse or anything about the system that exists for alcoholic beverages. It's very unique, very unique. It's survived the test of time. It hasn't been, I think the last, we did some research on this after the last hearing, the last time a cash law state went to credit was California in 1963. In fact, the last thing that happened on a credit state actually tightened up their credit stuff, New York. Most states are cash. Alcohol has two constitutional amendments, the 18th and the 21st. About the only product in the grocery store that has two constitutional amendments. It's a different product. It's just always has been treated differently. And there's a system in place now. Now, you know, the excellent testimony that you heard on Monday regarding the history of the 21st Amendment and how it came into being and everything, that a lot of those things don't exist anymore. But what you do have, in effect, businesses that are sort of in existence that are run based on those systems that have been in place. And when you change those businesses, see, what you're looking for is a win-win. If you change the businesses where you take money from your left pocket and put it in your right pocket, that does only your right pocket good. It does your left pocket harm. And really all the credit issue does is move money from one pocket, ours, to the other pocket, the grocer's. The EFT issue is a very real problem, and it solves a lot of problems. It will solve many, many problems, maybe not for everybody, but it does solve a lot of problems out there. It's a step forward. It's a win-win for everybody. There is nobody who could claim they would lose. Nobody could claim with a straight face they would lose if you passed the Dash 2 Amendment, so basically putting in the EFT. Nobody.
How much money would your industry here in the state of Oregon lose by conversion to a five-day credit?
We haven't really, Chair Wilson, we haven't really run the numbers, but basically what we have to figure is, first of all, the cost of borrowing the money for whatever period of time you're not going to have it. And five-day credit really isn't five-day credit, because in effect what will happen is five-day becomes at least, well, first of all, five business days is really 7 days because you have the weekends. And sometimes it can end up being really 7 days. You have then the check gets in the mail on that last business day. And then how long does the check take to arrive? And then what happens when you get the check? So it really stretches out for quite a while. And then you get faced with the other problem of credit, which is, yes, the check's in the mail. Sort of like, hi, I'm from the government and I'm here to help you. You know, one of those things where you don't really believe it. And depending on the size of the retailer you're dealing with, you're going to keep believing it. You're not going to turn in anybody. You are going to have people to go after the bad debt. So you have that expense also. When we figured
that this was millions and millions of dollars when we were looking at a 15-day credit situation. A local distributor here who has about a $1 million monthly figured he would have to borrow, say, $300,000 just to cover the initial chunk, and then he'd have the bad debt costs and stuff. So we really haven't run those numbers. But suffice it to say that we would not be fighting very hard for this if it wasn't a huge, what we felt was a huge dollar out. Most of your small distributorships are marginal operations, most of them. Industry has been consolidating. This will push it over the edge because there's a lot of those guys who really can't do the borrowing.
Let me ask, once the initial conversion is made, you anticipate, call it 5 days. Once the initial conversion is made to that kind of regime, what are your expected anticipated costs after that point?
Mr. Chair, you at that point, basically assuming you have a reasonably steady cash flow, we don't have any bad debt right now. It's nice business. I mean, we're not complaining about it.
Also unique in that way.
Pardon? Also unique. We don't have that factor in there. Those are all things that we will start having. Bad debt, we'll have collection costs, those are ongoing factors. The initial hit is really the big one. But those are all things that we enjoy right now, a system that is nice. And again, I'm not trying to say we don't have something that's unique. We do. But I go back to the point of what is the consumer benefit for you to go and initiate a system. You have two different amendments here. One of them is a win-win. Now, there's nobody who loses. The other one is a situation where basically you're taking money from one pocket and putting it in another pocket. And is there a consumer benefit to doing that?
Joe, back to you. Paul just characterized the -2 amendments as a win-win situation. You probably know your membership better than anyone. Is it a win-win situation or what? This is a good gesture, but is your industry in a position to accept it and use it?
Mr. Chair, I don't think in that form you're going to have a lot of people jumping to use that. So in a win-win, I think Paul's right in the sense we don't lose anything, but we also don't gain anything. It's we appreciate his gesture towards that, but it has almost no effect on today's current practices. No one's going to jump to the distributor withdrawal. People don't like people in their checkbooks. I think in terms of when you look at credit, and I'd like to address what Paul was saying, but I don't agree with his view of how it happens. There's no transfer of money from distributors to retailers. Let's say it's just 5 days, and for argument's sake, it takes 8 to get there. So let's say there's 8 days gap in this. The 8 days currently today with the check, even if it's delivered at COD, let's take the worst case scenario, is 3 days. So now we're back to a 5-day difference between today, what's happening today and what's happening if we pass the -1 amendments. So really it's a 5-day difference. It's the only thing we're changing. Now, if the distributor were on cash requirement with their manufacturer, then they would have to borrow money because money's going from almost a hand-to-mouth situation. But the fact that the distributor has some lag time, depending on if it's 10 days or 30 days, depending on the distributor and their negotiations and their contract requirements, for every day they have terms, is a day you take off what they would have to come up with this five days, because it's extended to them. They don't have bills due immediately when they get our money and have to pass it down the chain. They get the money, hold it, use it, that's okay, then pass it down the chain. So the only effect they have is how long they can hold it and earn money on it. And you don't have to borrow money to do that. You just get a little less interest and then pass it down the chain. That's the only difference. So there's no transfer of money at all between distributors and retailers. And as long as they have terms, it's reduced. We're only talking now about coming up with enough cash to go 3-4 days.
Representative Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Gilliam, you said that it probably wouldn't be used and there wouldn't be perceived as having much benefit. But if I was to go back and do what Mr. Romaine said and listen to the testimony that when this was first up, my recollection of it, the figure may be a little bit high, maybe not 90%, but 85% of the testimony was about inconvenience, trying to find two people that can sign a check. If you can't get a check, trying to find the cash. Basic inconvenience items. And it appears that the EFT would resolve a lot of that inconvenience portion of it. So why wouldn't it be perceived as a benefit?
Mr. Chair, Representative Devlin, two reasons depending on the way you do it. And we did some research afterwards. One, if it's an extra expense, it's going to increase the cost of doing business, then people are going to make choices based on, they're going to weigh that. There's going to be some issue over whether they want someone else controlling their checking account. That's going to scare some people off, but also the expense. The third thing is that just going to EFT in a matter, if you have a short term when you have to pay it, let's say it's next business day, let's say it was two business days you had to pay it. Give you a good example. Ross Supermarkets, 11 stores, they came in and testified. But they only have one person who's authorized to do electronic fund transfer because it's a security issue. And only one computer which is programmed to do EFT, because with EFT, it's not only just a matter of someone wrote a bad check and ran down and cashed it. You could send money any place in the world with EFT, so it's very high security. So now with 16 deliveries a week, now you're asking the comptroller, the company, to be available with the distributors to enter those every day as you go along, and doesn't become as functional. Now, we're willing to try. I agree with Paul. We would like to put something together, see how it runs, see how things work. But I think from our perspective, we ought to let it run. Let's do 5 days and see how it works. Paul brought up the state of California. When they went from, I know the testimony from somebody in the last hearing was no one's ever flipped these laws. Well, I believe every state who has credit terms now flipped the law, and California is one example, our neighboring state. And they flipped to 30 days. And there are still distributors all over the state, and actually the price of a wholesale price of beer per case is less, and when you take out all the taxes, get the tax structure, the wholesale raw cost is less in California than Oregon. So there's no impact to the consumer at all in all this. And history shows that in other states who have changed the law and gone to 30 days, we're talking about five, they've gone to 30, six times the amount. Competition's still there, distributors are still alive and healthy, price of beer's down. If I was in college, it'd be a pretty good day.
Paul?
Mr. Chair, just a couple of comments. The California example. Beer is priced by the manufacturer, by the brewery, differently in different states for whatever factor. There may be more competition in a particular state. So a wholesaler in Oregon does not buy the beer, notes the exact same package from a wholesale or from a Budweiser, for example, as they would in California. It's totally, there's a ton of factors that go into that.
Mm-hmm.
We have other things that are built into our price. I know the grocers don't really believe this, but we do have costs associated with the bottle bill. They have tremendous costs associated with the bottle bill. But those are all things that are just, everything's built in, so you're really comparing apples to oranges. I would like to, and also on the credit issue, since it was brought up, we receive mostly, sometimes, not always, credit from the breweries. We get varying amounts. I'll give you an example of a Budweiser distributor that I was talking to last night who receives 10 days credit. Their inventory requirement, depending on the season, is between 20 and 28 days. They have to keep that. So the product, and plus the EFT is initiated, and it is EFT from the brewer, believe me.
it's taken out of the wholesaler account the minute the stuff's put on the truck at the brewery, so they may not get it for a couple of days. And that's part of the 10 days. It then sits in the warehouse. The product, assuming you're in a season where you only have a 20-day inventory, then it's sitting in the warehouse for 20 days before it goes out. You may have, say, 7 days remaining on that credit, but for 13 of those days, it's in your warehouse. The beer that's delivered to that retail store on Tuesday, at least in most instances, is gone by Friday, unless they bought Billy beer or something else like that. But it's basically gone the next time we deliver it. That's the theory behind the way our deliveries are set up, and if it works perfectly. I would like to...
Mr. Chair?
Representative Doyle.
Just to clarify that, are you saying then that in California, as an example, where they have 30-day credit terms for the grocers, that the breweries do not give 30-day credit terms at least to the wholesalers?
Mr. Chair, Representative Doyle, I didn't say that at all. I said in Oregon.
And so in Oregon...
This is what we have. Now, in California, I don't know what credit terms they do get. My guess is they do get 30 days plus to help them go through. That's my guess. I don't know for sure. And again, it depends on the brewery.
Do you have any information to suggest that the wholesaler or the breweries wouldn't do the same kind of extension of terms to help out the distributors?
Mr. Chair, Representative Doyle, I have no idea. We would definitely go back to the brewery. I can guarantee you, if you pass a 5-day credit or a 10-day credit or a 30-day credit, I guarantee you we will go to the brewery and say, help. That's the first place we will go.
Mr. Chair.
They could say no or yes or whatever. I do want to point out one more thing, and I'll pass this around to you, because the gentleman from Fred Meyer was talking about Ohio. I have just happened to get in the mail from FinTech, which is the kind of third-party vendor for doing these EFTs. This was their March issue of this year. And they talk about the states they're approved in and stuff, and they list all their new customers who are using EFT in various states. And I'll just read you the Ohio ones. You've got Sunoco Country Star, I think that's a gas station, VFW Post 5135 in Coldwater, Planet Express, Max and Irma's Restaurants, Pure Platinum Productions, Dorothy Lane Market in Dayton, Kierwin Supermarket in Gibbonsville, on and on and on. And this is, I'll be happy to pass it around so you can take a look. Who uses EFT? These are the people who use it. They're the everyday markets, and they're the big guys.
Okay, Joe?
Mr. Chair, I guess the only thing I respond to is, I think, you know, pulse is very important. It's not... The credit component of this is not the only thing affecting price, and it obviously is not the key thing affecting price. If you have 30-day terms in one state and not in the other, it is not going to raise the price of beer or drop the price of beer. It's going to be invisible to the consumer. It's not having that effect. It didn't have a gripping effect in California and drive beer prices up. It didn't do that. There are a number of things, energy costs, transportation costs, taxes, all these other things that really affect, have a huge effect, because they will go back to the brewer, and they will go back and renegotiate in order to fit whatever statute might be in the state. The brewers are not going to let the distributors go out of business. They can't afford to, because they are their warehouses, and if they did let them go out of business, they would have to build warehouses. But in the same effect, we're the warehouses for the distributor. We have to house and floor and get inventory costs. We pay that for the distributor because their products come through our stores and we sell it. We pay for the refrigeration costs, which aren't getting any cheaper, by the way, to put this product out and make it convenient for our customers. We need to do that for us to be in business, but it's a benefit to the distributor that we do it for them. While they get consideration from the brewer for their holding of the product, we get no consideration for holding the product for the distributor. And so, you know, it does travel down the chain, and we should have those same types of benefits that Paul's folks have. We think going to the 5-day rule is very modest It's doable, it's workable, and if you will, there is what I'm trying to, if you will, approach a problem this big for any size retailer, whether it be Safeway or Doug Peterson's Peterson's Newsstand. And within this big circle are checks and EFT. And the Dash 2 amendments address this portion of the circle. But we're leaving everybody else out. And we'd like to make it available to all, improve the situation, and God help me if we had 5 days. I hope I never have to be before this committee again.
I stated I was talking about beer, Mr. Chair, earlier. I know the, for example, in Salem on wine, I did not. Not all wine producers grant any credit to distributors. In fact, here in Salem, in your district, the Gallo distributor gets no credit whatsoever. There's no. He pays by EFT when it's shipped.
Mr. Chair, just to clarify, do you know how he pays by EFT?
Yes, it's initiated by Gallo.
Okay.
That's, yeah. Big guy always does what the big guy wants to do. We would, Mr. Chair, we would be very happy to grant similar kind of credit terms that we get from brewers if the retailers would be willing to inventory the product for the number of days that we're required to inventory the product. If we could basically go to a retail grocer once every 20 days, we would be more than happy to give them 10 days credit.
Okay, thank you. Any final questions here? Representative Berger.
Yes, the first one, I have several, but the first one is for Paul. Would you explain to me the difference in the electronic transfers that are in the Dash 2, because they have always had the ability, from reading the original bill, to electronically transfer?
Mr. Chair, Representative Verger, that was your point was my point for a long time. And then, actually, what happened when we received, I reread the letters from the Liquor Control Commission, particularly the letter that the retail grocers received in early April. That letter said something that I was not, it took me a while to kind of figure. I didn't see it in the letter. It said that the EFT had to be completed by the next business day. We always thought it had to be initiated by the next business day. And there is no way physically you're going to be able to complete the EFT and get the funds transferred. That's why we went back and said, this is ridiculous, let's draft out a way to make it work. And that's what you have in the Dash 2s. That's the difference. What we say is initiated next business day.
Okay.
OLCC had interpreted existing law to say completed by the end of that business day.
Joe, in prior testimony, there was some discussion about distribution. In other words, areas, almost like franchises. Now, that's on beer and wine?
Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, I believe it's just beer, if I read the 474 correct.
Okay.
The protected territories is just beer.
Okay. And so there's not any distribution, no special areas for, you're not limited, in other words, with wine?
Mr. Chair, Representative Verger, I do not believe so with wine.
Okay.
I could probably, yes and no. I was thinking about it. Actually, you're not, with beer, because of the bottle bill, you have defined territories. We have defined territories where only one, depending on the geographic area. With wine, there aren't defined territories, but some wineries do give you in your contract or orally an area of responsibility, and you know you're not supposed to go outside your area of responsibility.
Sandra, do you have something you add quickly to that to clarify?
For the record, my name is Sandra Bishop. I represent the Wine Institute. Let there be no confusion. There are not territories for wine. The territories does only, as the gentleman alluded to, cover beer. There are, as Mr. Romaine just started talking about, there are particular arrangements with your distributor for your wine, but they're not under state law in Oregon, under any sort of territory.
Let's go on record saying that we would love if you wanted to give us the territories, but I don't think you
will. My last question is credit, and I think I've probably expressed this to you outside of the hearing, but credit between people and between companies is a very personal thing. If you want to have credit on a home or a car or anything, if you're dealing with people that are making a decision, I think there is a level of discomfort that I can feel in the hearings, and I think the reason for that discomfort is that it's very similar to me of the city that has to have a 10-foot setback for a fence. But we don't regulate pretty or beautiful, so you can put up the ugliest fence you want, and you're still legal because you're 10-foot setback. And I think when you get into these areas, I guess my question to both of you is there any opportunity, any possibility that two privately owned groups of people can possibly get together and bring government a type of compromise that we would all be happy to accept?
Mr. Chair, Representative Verger, this issue has been debated since 1934. When the Knox Act passed. I know it's the desire of everybody here to not debate it ever again. It's my desire to not debate it ever again, otherwise, although there are people in the back of the room who believe it's my annuity. But I think it just happens to be an issue that is going to be, it's a system that has been created. There's a huge amount of money at stake. I think we are trying to go as far as we can. Again, when we heard the problem of the EFT, we did try and, when we saw it, we did try and solve it. And, you know, and I think there's good faith on the other side. If I will tell you, if I were a retail grocer, I would be doing the exact same thing that the retail grocers are doing. Exactly.
Mr. Chair, Representative Verger, I wholeheartedly believe with your statement that it is a private matter between business to business, person to a business, whatever the case may be. Unfortunately, the Tide House laws prohibit us from keeping that and doing that. And until there is some exception or some allowance in that rule, we can't negotiate just business to business. As far as negotiating a compromise, I guess the only difference is Paul speaks of it in terms of the debate, and we've been trying to speak of it in terms of a compromise or a solution. We've offered many things. We believe we have an offer on the table that is extremely reasonable. It skirts the issue of opening the door to credit. It just defines course of business. It's not enough time to cause anybody any damage. And I mean, I don't know more what we could do. We've offered bonds. We've offered no payment language. We offered everything we can. And we're here now just saying, let's just make sure they get their payment out within 5 days. And that is just in any business, in yours, at home, or any place across the state, just not unreasonable. So that's where we're at.
Well, I want to thank both of you for your able work. It's obviously something that's been around forever, but the industries are well represented by you two, and that gives me some comfort and feeling that this is not a dead issue and can't go anywhere. I think it can go somewhere. Interesting issue, because both of your businesses need each other very much, and when you get right down to it, you're business partners.
We are.
And we want to be sensitive to that here on this committee. Many times I know I've told other people to stay out of my business and don't tell me how to run mine. And unfortunately, in this process, in this decision-making process, we're having to, being asked anyway, to weigh in there and settle a deep running issue among friends. And so we want to be contemplative about it. We want to give you more time to think about it. I think there's a desire in this committee to see something occur. And what that something is yet, I'm not sure. But I would just ask you to make that as easy on us as you can. And I would just ask members of the committee to carry this home with you this weekend, because this is something that we want to come back to. And I'm sorry, but there are no days off in this world. And it is my desire to revisit this issue, but I would like all of us to somehow coalesce and make this a lot easier job than it might look like today.
I do want to thank both of you for the work that you've done so far. It gives me faith not only in you but the system, and I think we can probably go somewhere with this.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Nothing further on my agenda. Let's knock it off.